This is Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. It's your connection to local music. On the show today, we have pianist Boris Behrmann, who will be appearing at the Allerton Music Barn Festival this coming Sunday evening at 8:30. That's at Allerton Park in Monticello. And then Michael Luxner, who is music director of the Millick and Decatur Symphony Orchestra, based in Decatur, Illinois, which is giving its first preseason concert. It's their annual Labor Day Pops concert on Labor Day itself at 6 o'clock, free concert in Nelson Park in Decatur. That's coming up on Monday. Both of those gentlemen guests today on Live and Local here on FM 90.9. Stay tuned. Music by Johannes Brahms. That was an orchestration of one of his piano waltzes, originally for piano four hands, performed by Kammerata Bern of Switzerland under the leader Thomas Fury, who also made the orchestration of that Brahms waltz. On Sunday evening at Allerton Park in Monticello at the Allerton Music Barn Festival, the pianist Boris Behrmann will play a recital of music by Chopin and Prokofiev. Boris Behrmann was born in Moscow, went to the Moscow Tchaikovsky Conservatory, studied there with the pianist Lev Oborin, and left the Soviet Union for Israel in 1973, not long after moved to the United States, began what has become a long and distinguished teaching career. He is now distinguished professor at the Yale University School of Music. And I had an opportunity to talk with him just earlier today for about 20 minutes or so. We talked about quite a variety of things pertaining to his concert, but also pertaining a lot to his teaching and initially to his teacher, Lev Oborin.
Well, Lev Oborin was a fantastic musician, a fantastic pianist, and a very good teacher. His teaching was not of a kind when, a teacher coaches every note, but it was rather aimed to give a broader outlook, and it was always guided by his very lucid understanding of the piece in question, of the style, and also I think he knew very well how to treat each of his students and what this particular student needed at this time most.
And do you think that your own teaching reflects some of his methods, or have you taken some of that and gone in a very different approach, or what's your general approach to working with students?
Well, I think I took a lot of his approach with me. It is very interesting. I do not remember that many concrete things that he was telling me. However, when I have read rather recently some reminiscences of his teaching written by people who worked with him much longer than I did in their capacity of both a student and an assistant, I suddenly realized, oh gee, that's exactly what I tell my students as well. So somehow it did influence me a great deal. And my approach, it's probably, it is both the combination of his teaching and various experiences of my life and studies and performances, both in Russia and outside of Russia. I live outside of Russia since 73. I spent most of my life outside of Russia. And definitely it gave me different vantage points comparing to what Oborin had, and I'm sure that in many ways my approach is different.
You commented on his own on his teaching that he took each student in a different way rather than simply trying to use some basic lesson plan and treat everybody the same. I assume that you take an approach similar to that.
Oh, very much so. Very much so. And some of my students who have been sitting through my lessons with other students have remarked me that I was teaching somebody quite different from the way I was teaching themselves. And I think that's how it should be. And it also is very important to know what this particular student needs at this particular time. Some people have technical deficiencies which need to be worked on. Some people need to expand their sound palette. Some need to be exposed to different stylistic to different styles in music, and that, of course, all has to be factored in.
In your own performing, you have seemed to make a specialty of, and you can correct me if this is a very accurate characterization, of recording and performing music that is, a lot of Russian music, a lot of more contemporary music than many contemporary pianists have done.
My correction would be it's the recording companies which made me a specialist in this field, because, while I would never record something I do not like playing, my concert repertoire certainly is much wider than my recorded repertoire.
Give us some examples. A typical recording, let's say, versus a typical recital.
Well, for instance, I play lots of Brahms, lots of Mozart, and they are not, or almost not, on my recording list. Some chamber works, yes, but not solo works. I play much of Beethoven, Haydn, and again Chopin, and again these are not the composers represented on my recording list, and this is just because the companies were more interested in having me recording something else.
That actually seems an unusual and perhaps a positive thing, because it seems that so often the recording companies want people to record the more standard stuff because they figure listeners want to hear more Mozart and so on. But so the Prokofiev recital or complete works recordings that you did on the Chandos label, That was the recording company's idea as well?
No, I played Prokofiev, but it kind of, it was a rather interesting story behind it. I collaborated a lot with a wonderful conductor named Jarvi, and at one point he approached me asking if I would be ready to record some Prokofiev concertos with the Concertgebouw Orchestra for Chandos. And I readily agreed, of course, and I recorded three concertos for them. They were very happy. And we spoke about some other possibilities. And I said, well, the Prokofiev anniversary is coming up. Would you like a disc of lesser known Prokofiev works? And they said, yes, absolutely, but not all of them. I was very much taken aback. I said, well, we can try this. And they said, and what about the sonatas? Why can't we include them? And that's how the project was born. And it was a fantastically interesting and incredibly difficult project, because just it's a lot of music there. It ended with needing 9 CDs to cover all piano solo works by Prokofiev, including his transcriptions of his own works and of works of other composers. So it was a fascinating project, but it kind of was born in this very casual way.
When you're working, and I meant to give a quick pause to that recital, to that conversation. You are listening to a conversation with pianist Boris Behrmann, who is going to be performing Sunday evening as part of the Allerton Music Barn Festival at Allerton Park in Monticello. That's sponsored by the University of Illinois School of Music. He will be there Sunday evening at 8:30. And playing a recital of music by Chopin and Prokofiev, since we have been speaking about Prokofiev, I thought we would play a sample of some of his playing from that complete recording, the complete set of recordings of Prokofiev's piano music on the Chandos label. Here are 4 short pieces from Prokofiev's Music for Children. And some of these are not unlike the general style of Prokofiev's music for Romeo and Juliet, which is why I thought in part of these. We begin with a waltz, and then we hear the March of the Grasshoppers, a short piece called The Rain and the Rainbow, a movement called Tag, as in the children's game, and then a march. It's pianist Boris Behrmann here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Those were 5 selections from Sergei Prokofiev's collection of music for children. We heard a waltz, the March of the Grasshoppers, the Rain and the Rainbow, Tag, and a march. Boris Behrmann, the pianist, here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. We'll continue our conversation with him in just a moment. Coming up, a music events calendar and theater events calendar. And then later on, a conversation with Michael Luxner, a music director of the Millikan Decatur Symphony Orchestra, giving its Labor Day concert on Monday, on Labor Day itself. logically enough. Today's programs on FM 90.9 are made possible in part by 10,000 villages in downtown Champaign, providing income to artisans in developing countries by marketing their handicrafts and telling their stories in North America. Sunday night is Boris Behrmann's recital at 8:30 at the Allerton Music Barn Festival. In my conversation earlier this morning, we talked, among other things, about his teaching, and I asked, given what in our previous conversation he was saying about some of his own repertory choices for recital and recording, how he makes repertory suggestions to his students.
Well, whenever a new student comes to work with me, I discuss with him the repertoire. And first of all, I want to know what his experience in various styles is, because, you know, the piano repertoire is so large that nobody can cover it fully or even come close to it. And of course, not a young person of 18, 20, 22. These are the ages of students who usually, when they come to me, usually. And so I simply ask them, how many Haydn sonatas have you played? How many Mozart sonatas? What Chopin did you play? I go through the list of major composers, and sometimes I hear, well, I played no Brahms at all. I said, well, maybe this is something to be put on the agenda immediately. And I have not played Bach Prelude and Fugue in 5 years. I would say, well, let's do it then now. You know, this kind of thing. In addition, through the audition, I would have formed my impression of the person, his or her most urgent needs, and therefore the repertoire which may address these needs in the quickest way. Well, for instance, if I feel that the person is not good enough in the area of tone variety, I would recommend some works by Debussy, which would be great to improve this aspect of playing. If the person is not does not have a very good command of rhythm, I would perhaps suggest certain works by Bartok or Henestera or Prokofiev, and so on.
When a student comes to you, are they most often undergraduate level, graduate level, or does it depend on the student?
Mostly they are on a graduate level. I work at Yale School of Music, which is a graduate school, and therefore most of my students come after having spent 4 years of undergraduate studies elsewhere. However, on rare occasions, I do take undergraduate students from Yale College, or we also have an interesting program called the Certificate in Performance, which allows us to accept in Yale School of Music program to accept people who do not have the bachelor's degree.
And when they come to you at whatever level it is the assumption that their goal is to be a concert pianist, or not necessarily, and how much do you concern yourself with that? what they want to be when they're done?
Well, the assumption is that they want to be in music professionally, in music performance professionally, whether it means they would end up as soloists, teachers, chamber performers, or all of the above, depends very much on their personality, on their talent, and on their luck. But I see as my obligation to prepare them for various aspects of the life of a professional pianist.
Are you aware if you've had any that go on, say, to be Broadway pianists or musical directors of music theater or things like that?
Yes, there have been some students, both of mine and of my colleagues, who went into this area. This is not the area in which I can be helpful, but I would certainly be glad to direct them to appropriate teachers.
Coming back to Prokofiev, what is your personal connection to his music, or I guess put another way, why do you like his music so much, or what do you like particularly about it?
Well, the personal connection is that for me personally, you see, my parents were not musicians. They liked music, and they had a very, I would say, conservative taste, which I inherited. For me, Prokofiev was the first contemporary composer I really appreciated. So for me, for many years, during my adolescent time, Prokofiev was the contemporary composer, so I always have a particular attraction to Prokofiev because of this, because of the fact that through Prokofiev I entered the world of modern music. And until now, I enjoy playing and hearing his music. I think his music is tremendously varied in characters. He had a fantastic ability to establish a musical character, a particular emotion, within first two or three bars. It's just incredible. And of course, this ability was serving him particularly well when he was writing music for ballet. And as we know, he wrote a lot of it.
And of course, on your program at the Allerton Music Barn Festival, you are bringing some of his ballet music. Talk to us a bit about the program overall. You have Chopin and Prokofiev, including selections from Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah, Prokofiev has made a lot of arrangements of his ballet music. There are these 10 pieces from Romeo and Juliet. There are also several sets of pieces from Cinderella, from other ballets, and all these arrangements are made brilliantly because Prokofiev was, of course, a fantastic pianist in his own right. And I play four pieces from this set of 10 pieces from Romeo and Juliet. In addition, I play two of his sonatas, the fifth and the seventh. As for the seventh sonata, it is, of course, one of so-called war sonatas. And is perhaps one of his most successful and captivating compositions. And in the first half, I play works by Chopin, and quite unusually, it's the first time I'm doing this, much of the first half is taken by Chopin's nocturnes. Usually, nocturnes appear on the programs, well, one would put two or three nocturnes. I play seven nocturnes in a row, and it is a fantastic experience. And then I play a remarkable late work of Chopin, Polonaise Fantaisie, which is a big and complex work, and it contrasts wonderfully with the nocturnes.
Pianist Boris Berman appearing at the Allerton Music Barn Festival this coming Sunday evening at 8:30. The program will be preceded by, actually, a bit of a bird walk. That's at 6:30, hosted by Reverend Roger Diggs of Grace Lutheran Church in Champaign. He happens to be an avid birder, and you're welcome to wander through the grounds of Allerton Park with him there. And then there's also going to be a star walk after the concert at around 10:30 or so. A sky tour with a member of the University of Illinois Astronomy Department. That's all at the Allerton Music Barn Festival, which begins on Thursday at Allerton Park in Monticello. Boris Berman, I spoke with him earlier today from his home in New Haven, Connecticut. He teaches at Yale University School of Music. I'm Kevin Kelly. This is Live and Local. Our programs today are made possible with support from The Great Impasta, a family-owned restaurant serving foods from northern Italy for more than 25 years. The Great Impasta is now open in their new location at Lincoln Square in downtown Urbana. More information is available at 359-7377. Coming up, a conversation with Michael Luxner, music director of the Millikan Decatur Symphony Orchestra. Pianist Garrick Olson playing Chopin's Waltz in D-flat, Opus 64, number 1, here on FM 90.9. Here's a look at some of the music and theater events you can go see and hear in our listening area. Tonight at 5:30, it's the bluegrass group Strings Attached performing at the Dockside Cafe at Kickapoo Landing in Oakwood. That's at Kickapoo State Park. Tonight at 5:30. Then at 7:30 this evening in Urbana at Smith Memorial Hall on the University of Illinois campus, it's the Ensemble Unity, a guest artist recital. They are flutist Qixian Chen, violist Xinyi Wei, and pianist Yan Chen. That's tonight at 7:30. Tomorrow night at 7 o'clock in Champaign at Bentley's Pub, it's the weekly Irish traditional music session. And at 6 o'clock in Urbana tomorrow night, Donnie Heitler has his weekly gig at the Great Impasta restaurant, solo jazz he plays. Also in Urbana tomorrow night at 7 o'clock, the Mark O'Connor Quintet. Sax player Mark O'Connor was actually on this radio program with another trio, the Chris Raymond Trio. He's got his own quintet performing jazz at the Iron Post tomorrow night in Urbana, 7 o'clock. And then the Allerton Music Barn Festival opens on Thursday, as we mentioned, with Astor Piazzolla's tango opera Maria de Buenos Aires. That is at 8:30 at Allerton Park on Thursday. The pre-concert program begins at 6:30. And Thursday at noon, the Illinois Woodwind Quintet from the University of Illinois with guest artists were performing at the Mills Breast Cancer Institute at Carl Clinic in Urbana on University Avenue. That is a free program. Their music series there goes on all year long. And the play called Unnecessary Farce is at Conklin's Barn 2 Dinner Theater in Goodfield Thursday evening at 6 o'clock. And it's Dudley Owens and his band playing at Luna Cafe in downtown Champaign. That's a jazz group also. That's Thursday evening at 7. The Millikan Decatur Symphony Orchestra opens its season with its annual Labor Day Pops concert on Monday, Labor Day, at 6 o'clock, a free program at Nelson Park. And earlier today, I spoke with Michael Luxner, who is a professor of music at Millikan University and music director of the Millikan Decatur Symphony Orchestra. Tell me about how you go about deciding a season for your particular orchestra.
Well, Kevin, you're a music director yourself, and of course, I think we can all agree that the easy part is how much wonderful music there is to choose from. You never have to go looking for music to make a great season. And so it's maybe like preparing a great banquet. You think of a season as having a beginning, middle, and end, and then within each course, that is to say every concert of the season, you want to have nice balance on the program. This being an orchestra that includes students, and in fact is curricular for Millikan students, we always want to include a certain steady diet of core repertoire so that they leave here with the music under their belts that they'll need to play as professionals. Always thinking about the audience, making sure that there's something that they I know they'll like and know they know, and at the same time looking for things that will stretch them a bit, and some music that makes people reflect, some that makes them just maybe laugh, and some that makes them just happy to be there, and in the end, somehow a season just emerges. I also speak a lot to the players, of course. Hey, what do you want to play? What haven't we done in a while? What would be fun to do? Of course, they usually only suggest things that have big solos for themselves. You have to take it with a grain of salt.
You've noticed that too, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, somebody in the orchestra says, you know, I have a wonderful repertoire suggestion, and gee, what a surprise that it happens to feature them as soloists.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. Now, so give me an example of something that either they might suggest or you might suggest that would make them laugh.
No, actually, when I was thinking make them laugh, I was thinking of the audience. Every April, we do a concert that is somehow off the beaten track. It might be repertoire that uses, you know, varying different ensembles, all drawn from the orchestra. It might be something that is funny or satiric, like maybe something by Ives, or I don't know, you know. It might be a Pops concert. It might be, I don't know, what makes an audience laugh. One time we did a concert called Invitation to the Dance, in which all the music was somehow dance-based, and it went from things for, you know, ballet suites for huge resonant orchestra to small things like Scott Joplin Rag, played by a Redback Book ensemble, and a dance or two from Histoire de Soldat, for instance, something like that. And one of the things on that concert was the music from Les Sylphides, which is orchestrated Chopin. And in one of the waltzes, I just had a couple that is a famous local pair of ballroom dancers just do a few turns across the stage from stage left to stage right as we were playing.
Wonderful.
Raised a laugh. You know, it doesn't do any harm to the music in a concert like that.
A little cameo appearance.
Yeah, yeah. Right. And, of course, everyone knew who they were. You know, a lot of fun, things like that.
So taking things out of order for the coming season, since you mentioned the April concert, what is in store next April?
This April is, again, an unusual feature. We end our season with a live screening of a 35-millimeter classic print of Chaplin's The Gold Rush, and with members of our orchestra playing Chaplin's original music live in accompaniment to the film. We're doing this all through the Chaplin Foundation in Paris, who insists on authentic performance practice, as that is to say, 35 millimeter, and they control the quality of the print, so you know it's in very, very good shape. You have to document that you have the equipment and the facility to do this correctly, and then you can rent the music, which has been expertly reconstructed and has just begun to catch on with various orchestras around the country. I'm starting to notice other events like this. The Chaplin wrote that music himself for his silent films, and he scored it himself. And he was very, very proud of that. His whole life he always said, "I wish people would give me more credit for my music." He felt it was a very integral part of his filmmaking. And of course, there was never anything like what you might call a critical edition of these, because they were always being changed and adapted for this theater or that size group, or a new release of the film, and then finally they have commissioned really good, clean, definitive versions with good cues in there, and they'll send you a compact disc, I guess you call it, of what do you call a video compact disc? A DVD. Sorry.
There you go.
A DVD of the film on which the conductor can practice the cues in the privacy of his own studio, but you're still only allowed one dress rehearsal of the film with the orchestra.
Oh, really? So you get to play, the orchestra plays with the film only one time before
Correct.
They do it?
Correct.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm a little on edge because it's a new kind of challenge for me. I think even a conductor who's done a lot of opera and ballet, looking at the score and the quickness and the frequency of the stops and starts, and of course the tempos vary dramatically, and the film's just going to keep going on. So it's a new challenge, and I'm looking forward to it, and our audience is already looking forward to it. We're going to be screening this. We're doing this whole thing in the Avon Theater in downtown Decatur, which itself is a historic theater. It dates from the silent era, and the fellow who operates it is a real film buff who teaches film classes at the local community college and is very excited about working with us on this whole project. So that's our off the beaten track thing for this April.
So was that purely your idea? You said you take suggestions. Was that a suggestion that came to you? Or?
That was actually a suggestion from a board member of the Symphony Guild of Decatur, who has seen this done in St. Louis with the St. Louis Symphony. The last couple of years, they've started doing it on New Year's Eve as a family friendly, good clean New Year's Eve family fun kind of thing. Free silent films with the St. Louis Symphony. I'm sorry, not free, but very low cost films priced for families. And they let give out popcorn right there in Powell Hall and let them eat. And the individual who has attended these said, "Michael, this would be a great way to bring new people to the audience and let them get exposed to the orchestra. And who knows, perhaps take an interest in the other things the orchestra does." And one thing led to another. We found that we could not accommodate the 35mm in Kirkland, our normal space, without putting the projector like right in the middle of the audience, because it won't go very far. And so that led to relocating to the Avon, and I don't know how it's going to pan out, but I do expect that there'll be a lot of people there who don't normally go, and it'll have a different feel to it because the seats will have to be unreserved and different seating plan, things
sure.
like that.
Does the Avon Theater have a full orchestra pit, or will you be on
no,
stage?
No, and that it doesn't. It has a stage, but not a pit. And that almost forced the choice of film. It turns out that most of the Chaplin films that now are available with the reconstructed scores have kind of a medium-sized pit orchestra, you know, say 23 to, you know, 26 players, something like that. The Gold Rush, it turns out, has a very large orchestra of something like 40 players. And because it is the one that has the largest, they made a chamber version of it, which uses only 14 players. And that is the only one we can fit. And the only way we can do that is to have the, nine string players on one side of the stage, one stand each of first, second, viola, and cello, and a bass, and then a handful of wind players on the other side, plus keyboard and percussion. So we don't have a pit. The orchestra will actually be divided on either side of the stage, and the audience will look through, you know, up the alley, right over my head to see the film. And we think that'll actually be even more engaging. So
you'll be right in the middle, silhouetted like Stokowski, right?
I will be slightly silhouetted, and that will create. There will be sightline problems for a few seats, and in order to give everyone a chance to resettle, or actually, the foundation does not allow an intermission. So what we're doing is we'll start the program with a little preview by Skip Houston, the owner of the Avon, a little preview to the film and the whole event. Then have a short break during which people can buy popcorn if they haven't already, and resettle in case any of the sight lines created by me or any of the musicians sticking out a little to relocate so they can see the film.
We're talking with Michael Luxner of the Millikan Decatur Symphony Orchestra. He's the conductor there. They're giving their opening Labor Day concert on Sunday. And I thought I'd interrupt briefly, since he's talking about the music and film of Charlie Chaplin, to let you know that Charlie Chaplin was not only a composer and actor, but also a cellist. We have here a little selection of music of his. It's called Park Avenue Waltz with cellist Thomas Beckmann and pianist Johannes Cernota. It's called the Park Avenue Waltz, music by Charlie Chaplin, here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Let's return to our conversation, taped earlier today, with Michael Luxner of the Millikan Decatur Symphony Orchestra, speaking about their upcoming Labor Day Pops concert.
Before we begin our indoor subscription series, our regular concert season, we are doing our traditional annual Labor Day Pops concert. This is the 13th year we have done this. When we started it, we researched it very carefully and planned it in such a way that we knew we could always do it at the same time in the same place on the same day, and hopefully have it become a real tradition shared by the college with the entire community. And that's just what happened. So every Labor Day on the Monday, the actual holiday itself, at 6 o'clock. We gather down at Nelson Park, which is on the shores of Lake Decatur. There's a natural grassy amphitheater there. The park district opens their doors to us and sets up some tables for people to picnic. And this has become such a tradition that, you know, we don't even have to publicize it anymore. Everyone just goes. In fact, those tables are usually claimed about you know, an hour before the concert, and then families come and bring picnics and blankets and enjoy an hour of very varied music and in an informal setting. And as I say, it's just become a real nice tradition, Millikan's gift to the community, and a nice way to say farewell to summer.
So what will people be hearing this Labor Day?
Well, I always include something for younger people. This year it's selections from High School Musical 2. Some years I don't even program the whole thing until the summer, when I see what the big summer blockbuster film was, and you know, then you can always get some highlights from it. I always program some jazz and theater music, because those are very strong programs at Millikan, and they kind of highlight some of our upcoming productions and players. This year I'm doing a Cole Porter medley and an excellent arrangement of some jazz standards by Brubaker called Touch of Jazz. And the rest of the program traditionally gives the little samplings of the repertoire that are part of our regular indoor season. For instance, on our opening night indoor concert a little later in September, we're doing the Beethoven Pastoral Symphony. So out on the Labor Day Park concert, we're going to do just the Storm movement from that. And
are you sure that's not risky?
You mean in bad
jinxing
luck?
The weather, yeah.
Yes, I've always thought it was bad luck programming something like the water music. But we've had very good luck, and we do have an alternate site if it rains.
So you're covered, okay.
We're not covered where we're supposed to be, but we can move and at least do some of this. We're also doing the Rimsky-Korsakov Scheherazade on our second indoor concert, and so we're previewing that by doing the third movement from that on Labor Day. And we're doing the Firebird Suite on our February concert, and we're previewing that by doing the Berceuse and Finale on Labor Day. And to start the program, we usually start with something snappy, and this year I decided just for fun to do the March from Athalia, Mendelssohn's March from Athalia, which is so much like the famous Mendelssohn Wedding March, but just different. So it's a little different. And, of course, it's his bicentennial in 2009, as a lot of the arts world has noted. And so little Mendelssohn to start. And then This Land Is Your Land, and always end with a little bit of rousing populist sentiment.
Little patriotism on Labor Day goes a long way.
Oh, yeah.
So what else, then, is on your second concert?
Well, I've pretty much given you the major works by telling you about the previews.
Mm-hmm.
Along with the Beethoven Pastoral on opening night on September 19th, we're joined by Tanya Bannister, a marvelous nationally known artist who has just broken through from the Concert Artist Guild to commercial management, and was the first of Symphony Magazine's Six to Watch last year. She's going to be playing the Chopin F minor with us, and we'll start that concert with a little Schubert overture in the Italian style. The Scheherazade concert on October 17th has a first half that includes two works featuring our principal clarinetist, Saul Baer, who is very well known to your audiences in Champaign-Urbana as a frequent player in your own Prairie Ensemble and a number of other groups in the region. He'll be playing the Debussy Premier Rhapsody for clarinet and the Weber Concertino, and we're starting that concert with an overture by Méhul, the overture to Les Deux Auvergnes de Tolède.
Which means what?
You don't know?
I can't remember.
You better call up a French professor and find out.
Yeah,
I didn't either. It's the Two Blind Men of Toledo.
Oh, there you go. It was on the tip of my tongue.
And then the February concert that has the Firebird Suite on it, the rest of that program is not determined until our concerto competition in October, which the winners of which become the soloists on that concert.
Sure.
And the centerpiece of our season this year is the Mahler Third on March 6th.
Ooh, that's ambitious.
Yeah, and there's nothing else on that concert. We're doing it the way Mahler intended, with the first movement, then intermission, and then everything else.
You, Millikan Decatur, always does a musical or two.
Yes, well, the Millikan Decatur collaborates with the Department of Theater and Dance, and so that there is always a fully staged musical as part of the subscription series for those people who buy orchestra season tickets get the musical along with it. And the Pitt Orchestra does, of course, comprise members of the orchestra. I don't conduct it myself. The theater department has its own music director, who is, of course, a specialist in that kind of thing.
And who is that?
Kevin Long directs all the musicals, not only the big one with us, but all the many other things that go on in that department throughout the year. The Department of Theater and Dance at Millikan is huge. It's just as impressive as the music school, and particularly production oriented. There are main stages and all kinds of things going on almost every hour of the day over here, and it's a very strong department. So I don't mind at all that we collaborate with them. I feel, for instance, that any of my orchestra students who get a chance to play a musical, far from being exploited, are seeing it at its best, and are really gaining fine experience in that kind of playing, which is part of any musician's bag of tricks, of course. They've done some very, very high-end productions, and this year it's Kiss Me, Kate is the November musical.
Michael Luxner, music director of the Millikan Decatur Symphony Orchestra. They're giving their Labor Day Pops concert on Monday, 6 o'clock, a free program in Nelson Park. This is Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly.